Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer.
Yes! Paul touch it up!
Thompson steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
The Clint Capella trade saga has come to a shocking conclusion. Clint Capella, Nene, and regrettably, the mayor of Houston himself, the king of the Bayou City, Gerald Green, and a Rockets first-round draft pick have all been dealt. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, an emergency podcast episode, sort of. This would have been a recap episode, kind of, because, I mean, the Rockets did play a basketball game Tuesday evening, but then immediately following the game, we were receiving all sorts of tweets from Woj and Shams, and it just turned into this unraveling series of events that this trade finally went through. Clint Capella is no longer a Houston Rocket, as well as the aforementioned Nene and Gerald Green as well. They have been dealt. The Rockets now receive back in this four-team deal involving the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Atlanta Hawks, and the Denver Nuggets of all teams, the dark horse team that comes in and joins in at the last second after Golden State pulled out of the original deal earlier this afternoon. And a plethora of players are all being swapped around, and the Rockets come out of it with Robert Covington and Jordan Bell and a second round draft pick. So the deal, as originally reported by Adrian Wojnarowski, was Houston receives Robert Covington, Atlanta receives Clint Capella and Nene, Minnesota receives Malik Beasley, Juancho Hernan Gomez, Evan Turner, Atlanta first-round draft pick through the Nets, and then Denver receives Gerald Green and a Houston first-round draft pick. And then it was later dropped that, hang on, there's a bunch of different players that got thrown in. So Keita Bates-Diop is going to Denver from Minnesota. Then more players getting thrown into the deal. Jared Vanderbilt from Denver is going to Minnesota. And then Jordan Bell to Houston. Minnesota's Noah Vonleh actually goes to the Nuggets as well. And then that was the last name. Sorry, tons of names being thrown around. So I've still got a lot of thoughts racing through my mind regarding this trade. But first things first is we started the early afternoon, Tuesday afternoon, with rumors that Golden State was willing to include Kevon Looney in this deal and that they were going to be the fourth team and that D'Angelo Russell was going to wind up a Timberwolf, he was going to wind up in the far north. And then Golden State pulls out last minute. So it looked like the Rockets were going to originally receive Robert Covington and Kevon Looney. I even sent out a tweet, popular, whatever. That did not happen. Instead, the Rockets walk away with Robert Covington and Jordan Bell, which means that there is definitely another trade or potentially a buyout candidate in the works for this team. Now, as it stands on the surface, this team now looks something like, where'd it go? Hang on, been sending out a million things. Here we go. So now you've got Russell Westbrook, Austin Rivers, obviously Clemens and Frazier at the end of the bench, Harden, McLemore, Eric Gordon, Daniel House, Robert Covington, Seth Alosha, William Howard way down there, two-way contract. And then Tucker is essentially your starting five now. Jordan Bell is not going to be starting at the five spot. Tucker is your new starting center, which has all sorts of concerns intertwined with that because he's got the shoulder stinger that does require surgery that he opted not to receive, right? So that's concerning that PJ Tucker, who is supposed to only be playing 30 minutes a game, is now your starting center for the remainder of the season. Now, there's still the hope and It's being reported by multiple different beat writers and national writers that the Rockets are still going to be aggressive in the trade market as well as the buyout market to try and find another candidate to play center, because they need a big body center. They need somebody that is actually a legitimate center to bang with the likes of Nikola Jokic, Anthony Davis, JaVale McGee to a certain extent, Dwight Howard, Brooke Lopez. There's other big centers in the league that they need a legitimate center for, legitimate size. They don't have that right now, and they need to get that. So the assets that they have on hand to be able to get that, they generated a pretty substantial TPE from this trade itself. Now, the dust is still settling. I don't even know which first-round draft pick the Rockets gave up, whether it's the 2020 or the 2022. Anyways, don't know which draft pick they gave up yet, but they did generate, I want to say it's about a $5 million TPE. That number may shift around a little bit as the dust settles regarding this trade. So they have a decent sized TPE there. They also still have their other two TPEs, unless one of those was used in the actual trade, which as the details of this trade continue to spill out, it'll become more clear as to what resources the Rockets have left to try and acquire another center. As it stands right now, some of the names that are still out there that are interesting are Aaron Baines from the Phoenix Suns. Kevon Looney may still remain in play, because if the Golden State Warriors are determined to shed his salary and to duck the tax this season to stop being in the repeater tax, then they need to send him to a team. And yeah, maybe they've got other options than the Rockets, and they wouldn't exactly want to help the Rockets by sending them a, you know, a legitimate piece that could help them and maybe be an obstacle for them in the coming years. But if they're determined to shed the salary and the best possible asset that they can get back is the remaining first round pick from the Houston Rockets, then it might make the most sense for the Warriors to trade Looney to the Rockets in a, you know, one for one deal. And the Rockets just absorb Looney with a TPE. And then last name is Rashawn Holmes from the Sacramento Kings, who remains an interesting option should they decide to offload him in return for a Rockets draft pick or potentially second round draft pick. But I'm on board with this trade. And I'm on board with it for a bunch of different reasons. Clint Capella, obviously, look, it feels bad to watch Clint Capella grow, because he's the only homegrown product the Rockets have held on to over the years, right? Pat Beverly was the first one. Pat Beverly was the, you know, the original, you know, he grew up here in Houston. Well, not grew up here in Houston, but we watched his career flourish here in Houston. He got his first shot here in Houston, right? So Pat Bev was, you know, grown up here, and then we had to trade him for Chris Paul. So that stung a little bit, right? Seeing him go. And then Montrezl Harrell as well, who, you know, he wasn't quite as big here in Houston, but then we see what he turned into over in Clipperland. And now you kind of look back on it, you're like, man, you know, it really sucks that they had to throw him in that deal. But Clint Capella, right, for it being a 25th, or sorry, a first-round draft pick, you know, number 25 in the first round, to see what he was able to develop into, starting out as Dwight Howard's, you know, end-of-the-bench backup, and then, you know, starting the 16-17 season as the starting center, and then really just growing into this role and excelling at it and being a huge part of this team for as many years now as he has been, it does suck to see him go. But he was the last viable trade chip that this team had to be able to improve their chances this year and moving forward. I do think that Clint Capella's production, for what he gives you, I think that Westbrook now changes that dynamic quite a bit. Russell Westbrook is not Chris Paul. The dynamic is now different. Westbrook, to be able to continue playing the way that he has been for the last month and a half or so, which has been just absolutely amazing to watch this midseason change from Westbrook. For him to be able to do that consistently, he does need the space to operate it. Now, he was still able to have some plays and still continue that production to an extent with a traditional five on the floor, but it's obvious how much easier it is for him to face up a defender or even back down a defender and have essentially Westbrook is playing your center position offensively. you're able to play out of the post through Russell Westbrook, which is not an element that this Rockets offense has had in recent years. Yes, Chris Paul played out of the post a little bit, but not to the point of being able to just duck to the rim and get an easy layup or even a dunk. Chris Paul would settle for the mid-range fadeaways or by setting up a play for somebody else out of the post, like the elevator play that we see a lot for Eric Gordon, where he, you know, dips down to the paint and then shoots up to the three-point arc for an easy catch and then a shot. So this Rockets offense is evolving, and it's becoming a bit more dynamic because we're seeing two completely different versions of it when the ball is in the hands of Russell Westbrook versus when it's in the hands of James Harden, and now they have the supporting cast to complement that fully. I think there was a bit of a divide as to whether or not it was possible to do that with a traditional five like Capella or Hartenstein on the floor, and so I think what we'll see is down the line, they'll have to use a traditional five, whoever they find, because they're going to have to find someone. They will have to use a traditional five against the bigger teams in the league. That part is obvious. But expect them to stick to the small ball five-out lineups when Russell Westbrook is on the court. When it's the James Harden-only lineups, yes, they'll probably go back to a traditional five, and they can get away with it as far as the spacing is concerned, because James will still be able to find ways to get to the rim and possibly even create for whoever this guy is. But Westbrook is just more efficient when he's got all that space to operate and when he can do pretty much exactly what he wants to on the court, which is this new, you know, posting up, getting to the cup, eliminating the threes, everything that we've seen out of him over the last month or so. So I don't know. I mean, obviously the Rockets played a game, you know, we'll talk a little bit about the Hornets game. I'll probably save that for the very end and just kind of briefly go over some thoughts from that one. But obviously this is the breaking news. This is the stuff everybody wants to hear about, the thoughts, the reactions, the emotions, all of that, which I'm still going through. I am still very much, it is a little bit after midnight as I am recording this podcast. I waited for the dust to settle on social media just a little bit before sitting down with my handy dandy microphone and putting this together. So we'll be right back with segment two in just one moment. So don't go anywhere. And we are back in here at Locked On Rockets, an emergency Locked On Rockets, sort of. Your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Talking about the breaking news surrounding the Houston Rockets, the trading of their starting center, Clint Capella, as well as Nene, Gerald Green, and a first-round draft pick for the likes of Robert Covington and Jordan Bell. I almost called him Rajah Bell. That would have been super weird. What a throwback, huh? Still a connection to Mike D'Antoni, so then sort of worked. Anyways, this is what you get for emergency, you know, midnight podcasts. But here we go. Mentioned it a little bit in the first segment, right? The dynamics of this team are just a little bit different now than they were in 2017-2018, the first year with Chris Paul. They're different than they were last year. The team is constructed differently. And let's face it, I've been saying it all season. This team is not, by any stretch of the imagination, a defensive-minded team. They're not going to go out and, you know, keep an opponent under, you know, 100 points a game. They're not going to win on the backs of their defense. Now, what they can do is they can lean into the areas of their defense that they are good at. And that's something that's actually been happening as the Rockets are now 4-0 in the ultra-small ball era. 3-0 if you don't count the Utah Jazz game, since the big three didn't play in that game. And it was kind of a fluke that Eric, man, maybe not a fluke, but, you know, the Eric Gordon 50-point burger, how often does that happen, right? So we'll call it 3-0 officially. But the Rockets are, what they're leaning into now is, yes, they are getting absolutely murdered in the rebounding department. That is, you can't argue that whatsoever. And so that's something that has to get a little bit better if they're going to continue to lean into this new ultra small ball lineup with PJ Tucker being your center, essentially. But what they have been doing is they've been forcing a large amount of turnovers. So we're just going to go back through these last three games. So Dallas being the first one, the Mavericks committed 17 turnovers to just 6 by the Rockets. Then you go to the New Orleans game. The Pelicans committed 21 turnovers to just 7 by the Rockets. And then you go to the most recent game against the Hornets, in which the Hornets committed 17 turnovers to just 4 by the Houston Rockets. So I wasn't quite originally buying into the idea that small ball suddenly let these guys force turnovers, that it, you know, suddenly playing small is what's allowing you to get your hands in the passing lanes. And I'm pretty sure I even remarked on this at one point, saying that why can't you just do that with a traditional five on the court? I don't know if it's just a mentality shift or a demeanor shift or what, but something about these small ball lineups have them playing slightly more aggressive defense. There's still miscommunications, there's still blown coverages, and those are kind of the defensive fundamentals that this team is lacking at times. But the other thing that this does, they're forcing more turnovers, and it's a small sample size, three games, right? So maybe it's just a fluke that they've handled the ball well and that other teams are turning the ball over in this short little stretch. But it's the only stretch that we have to really analyze it. So, and I'm not going to try and separate the stats from earlier this season. I'm not going to go that far into it yet. So looking at this little stretch of games, the other thing that obviously it's doing, right, the small ball is spacing the court. And an interesting thing that I found in one of the published articles by The Ringer is that apparently the Rockets' offense has been struggling with Capella on the court. So the Rockets' offense with Capella on the floor was simply putting up 110.3 points per 100 possessions, which was on pace with the 17th-ranked Pistons. That's with Clint Capella on the court. When he was off the court, the Rockets' numbers skyrocketed up to 117.3 points per 100, which is actually a number that would top the Mavericks, who are the best offense in the league right now. So the Rockets' offense does get extremely potent when there's not a traditional five on the court. So what does all this mean, right? What do these numbers mean? What's the relevancy behind any of this? The Rockets were never going to be a defensive juggernaut. They just don't have the tools. They don't have the personnel. They don't have the coaching. They don't have any of that to be considered a top defensive team. What they do have is a team that can be the most lethal offense in the league if they just lean into it. And so you're putting all your chickens in one basket, right? That's an expression. We're going to go with it. Anyways, all your eggs in one basket. There we go. That's the expression. Midnight podcast hit different, huh? Anyways, so you're putting all your eggs in one basket in the sense that you are relying on your extremely potent offense as well as a defense that is leaning into the, I guess, identity of rebounding by committee, forcing turnovers, switchability, which, let's face it, Jordan Bell is going to be a better switch defender than Clint Capella will be. Robert Covington is going to be phenomenal in that regard. So now the Rockets have a lineup, they have a core group of guys who are going to excel at exactly what this team wants to do and has been doing all season, rather than having this kind of somewhat of an identity shift every time you go from having a traditional big on the court to the small lineup. Now you're playing the same way all the time. And yes, they still need to find a true center to replace Clint Capella, but it won't be a replacement in the starting lineup. It'll be a guy who they can pull off the bench to actually guard some of the opposing bigs. Now, Isaiah Hartenstein is still there, and Isaiah Hartenstein may still get some burn against some of the other bigs in the league until the Rockets can find a suitable replacement. But until that day happens, and until Mike D'Antoni shows that he's willing to actually play Isaiah Hartenstein, I'm reluctant to think that that's going to be the case. I think the Rockets are going to trot out this small ball lineup very consistently. Obviously, PJ Tucker is going to be your starter. I would imagine the new starting lineup is going to be Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Eric Gordon, Robert Covington, and PJ Tucker. I'm positive they're just going to throw Covington right into the starting lineup and just run with it from there, which gives you a bench unit of Austin Rivers, Ben McLemore, Tabo Cephalosha, Daniel House, and Jordan Bell. And, I mean, you still got Isaiah Hartenstein and Tyson Chandler back there as well. So this lineup is interesting. And I think for what he was providing you from a production standpoint, I think that getting the extra wing help from Robert Covington, which will hopefully cut back on the minutes for PJ Tucker, as well as still having the combination of Isaiah Hartenstein and Tyson Chandler to hold down the fort against any of the truly big centers that you're going to face while you're searching for a new candidate for that backup center role, as well as Jordan Bell. Jordan Bell can hold his own a little bit against some of the bigger, the true bigs in the league. And what he'll be able to do is he can play above the rim like Capella. He's a little bit undersized, but think of him a little bit almost like Bam Adebayo from the Heat, right? Not quite as big as Bam. You know, Bam's got a bit of a bigger body, a little bit more weight to him. But that's what Jordan Bell can do for this team. He stands at about 6'8". He's explosive. We know what he did with the Golden State Warriors. In fact, you've already got people on Twitter who are saying that the Rockets now finally have some championship pedigree on their squad, which is rather frustrating. I knew that as soon as I saw Jordan Bell's name pop up, I was like, okay, the memes circling back to Golden State are going to be pretty rough to deal with. But there's that. And I think my biggest hope coming out of this is that Mike D'Antoni will actually expand the rotation a little bit. He's going to have to. He's going to have to play around and find out which lineups he likes the best, which lineups work the best. We've had this recent, you know, emergence or resurgence from Thabo Sefolosha. So he is a guy who could potentially still be in the rotation a little bit, even if it's just 10 to 15 minutes a night. But if you look at the Hornets game, which the Rockets won 125-110, not a normal recap episode, so I'll spend a little bit more time in the final segment actually talking about this victory. But everybody on the team played a ridiculous amount of minutes against the Hornets, a team that is 16-35. So PJ Tucker, 41 minutes. Daniel House Jr., 42 minutes. James Harden, 40 minutes. McLemore, 37. Obviously, this was a game where Clint Capella was sitting out, and you know, now he's gone. Russell Westbrook didn't play in this game because of his sore left thumb. So there were missing guys, but you just didn't have the right players to be able to plug in. There's just not there wasn't enough depth on this team. And so now you've got Covington, you've got Bell, you've got the resources to try and find another center. And so there's going to be a distinct, I guess, divide amongst Rockets fans. There's going to be people who hate this trade, who think that we shouldn't have given up Capella, and who think that we should have kept plugging along with the roster that we had. And then there's going to be people who love this trade, who think this is exactly the type of shakeup that this team needed. The team will also fall under the luxury tax because of this trade. Now, I don't want anybody to freak out about this. This wasn't a luxury tax incentivized move. This was the move that Daryl Morey and company thought would give them the best chance to compete. Because let's face it, if they wanted to duck the luxury tax, they didn't have to trade Clint Capella. They could have easily just jettisoned Nene or Chandler or whoever's contract to a team with a little bit of cap space, send a second round pick, whatever, and then duck the tax that way and keep everything hunky-dory. And then Rockets fans would have been up in arms. Oh, Tillman never does anything. Look, I've been as highly critical as of Tillman and of the organization as anybody else, except for maybe Rahat over at Red 94. He's very heated about the whole thing. But anyways, I've been highly critical of it. I don't think this move was purely a luxury tax move. I think that's just a side effect of a move that improves the Rockets' chances, because I genuinely think that the way the roster was constructed, they were headed for disappointment unless James Harden and Russell Westbrook played MVP-level basketball at the same time every game down the line. That's why we were seeing so many different close games, so many different, you know, nail-biters, so many games that were lost that they really shouldn't have lost, because the margin for error with that version of the team was so slim. So many things had to go right for them to be able to win games. I think that with this new roster, with this revitalized, switch everything, small ball roster, I'm excited to see what they can do. And the Rockets are historically a team that performs better in the second half of the season. They've done it this, 2 years in a row now? They've played They've played a lot better in the second half of the season. So I'm really excited to see how they bring this new lineup out, how Robert Covington functions in a lineup where he's going to get so many wide open three-pointers, he's not going to know what to do with himself. In a switching lineup where everybody has a bit of accountability in the sense that, you know, sometimes it's going to be James Harden guarding big, sometimes it'll be Covington, sometimes it'll be Tucker. You know, And there was a comparison made on Twitter about, well, I say there's a comparison made on Twitter. I made the comparison about, you know, Adam Spillane was talking about how Mike D'Antoni was, you know, speaking this entire last week about how the best lineup over the last couple seasons in the NBA has been a five-man lineup with Draymond Green at the center position. And so I drew the comparison, right? The Rockets don't necessarily have the Rockets basically have their own version of the Hamptons Five. We can call it the Bayou City Five. We can still call it the Tuck Wagon lineup, whatever we want to call it. But it's the new starting lineup, essentially, with Russ, Harden, Gordon, Covington, and Tucker. That lineup can switch everything. You've got two former MVPs. You've got two amazing defenders in Tucker and Covington, a plus defender in Gordon, and two guys who, when keyed in on defense, can be good. Russ and Harden can be good on the defensive side of the basketball when they're keyed in. You know, late game possessions, crucial possessions. Are they going to be keyed in for the entire 48? No, not by any stretch of the imagination. But in the playoffs and during important possessions, they are clearly keyed in and paying attention to what's going on. So I think this lineup has, it's not the Hamptons Five. It's not Steph Curry. It's not Kevin Durant. But James Harden and Russell Westbrook are amazing players in their own right. And James Harden, the way that he plays when he's playing at his peak, is insane. Russell Westbrook, with this new uber-efficient version of basketball that he's playing, is insane. If they can both keep that level of play going into the postseason, and if they can lean into this new roster structure, I'm excited. I really am. I'm not hiding it. This is a very fresh podcast. I didn't have time to prep anything. I pulled up a few tabs with some box scores, and that was that. There's very little prep that went into this. This is a reaction podcast because I'm feeling this reaction just like all of you are. So we'll get the final segment here in just one moment. I will talk a little bit about the Rockets' win against the Hornets, but obviously this is the pertinent news. This is the stuff that we want to talk about, the trade, how it works, and I'll get into the remaining pieces and some of the targets that I think they should go after as far as that center spot that they are sorely missing. So we'll get to that in just one moment, so don't go anywhere. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day, discussing the recent trade, all the fallout from it, everything going on involving the Clint Capela deal, the Robert Covington deal, whatever we want to call it. Couple new notes that have just come out just a few minutes ago. So Adrian Wojnarowski is now tweeting out saying that the Rockets have until the Thursday trade deadline window to expand this four-team trade, that they can include a player of up to $12 million in salary to basically absorb another option, another player. So the way that I'm taking this is, if I'm understanding it correctly, I think that the Rockets can essentially, because of all the salary that they jettisoned out in this trade, I believe that they can bring back in a player of up to $12 million in salary. Now, whether that means the trade gets expanded to a five-team deal, or potentially the trade includes another player from one of the original three teams, the Hawks, the Timberwolves, or the Denver Nuggets, and then that player is included in the deal, a player up to $12 million worth. Not quite sure which way that is supposed to be understood. I'm a little fuzzy on that. And then Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle also was tweeting out that the second round pick that the Rockets received in the deal will be It's actually going to be a 2024 second round pick from Atlanta that is actually coming from the Warriors. So the Warriors are sending the Rockets a 2024 second rounder that is from Atlanta, who is involved in the trade. Yeah, that's a little weird. But basically, the Rockets have a second round pick in 2024 now. So recouping their draft capital a little bit. It's not a first rounder, but it's still nice to, you know, get a little bit of assets back. So that $12 million is interesting because that's another avenue to where, and I think that impacts the supposed TPE that I mentioned in the earlier segment that the Rockets were supposed to have after this trade was fully complete. So if they opt to include a player of up to $12 million additionally in this trade, then they probably won't generate the TPE that I mentioned earlier, which would then limit them in the sense of being able to pull in a guy like Aaron Baines from the Phoenix Suns, who makes a little over $5 million. The TPE would have fit him perfectly. You could have just absorbed Aaron Baines with the TPE, thrown Phoenix a first-round pick, the last one that the Rockets have, or potentially a second-rounder or a couple second-rounders, whatever they deem necessary, and then you just take back Aaron Baines, you have him, you're all set, all said and done. That kind of impacts that a little bit. So until it's clear which direction the Rockets want to go in, I don't think they have the TPE quite just yet. Because the TPE, so you know how it works, right, is TPEs are generated when you send out more salary than you take back in, or sorry, you send out, yeah, there we go, making sure I get my words right. You send out more salary than you take back in a given trade, and that creates a traded player exception. The Rockets already have a couple of TPEs floating around the $3 million mark from the Brandon Knight trade, as well as the, which other trade did they make? Oh, the Marquise Chris trade. There we go. So by sending out Brandon Knight, by sending out Marquise Chris, they generated some TPEs, and those are laying around waiting to be used. So the Rockets do still have those to play around with as well. They can, we've talked about it before, they can absorb a guy like Markieff Morris with one of those TPEs from the Pistons if they decide they want to deal him. So, I'm kind of at this point where I really want to dig into the stats and kind of think about some things as far as, you know, Robert Covington and what he brings to the table. I mean, you know, looking at things on the surface, he is a career, what was it? Yeah, career 30, almost 36% three-point shooter. He's having a bit of a down year from the three-point line, shooting just a smidge under 35% this season. But last season, he shot 37%. The season prior to that, 39%. And I think that's important, the season, you know, couple seasons ago when he was still in Philadelphia, because he had Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid helping create shots for him, right? Whereas in Minnesota, yeah, he's got Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, but obviously Minnesota's been struggling. They're not a great team. So putting him in a system where he's got the likes of James Harden and Russell Westbrook generating shots for him all of a sudden, I'm really hoping that he'll be getting so many wide open looks that his three-point percentage will climb back up, ideally towards that 38-39% mark that it's been at before. Now, there are some concerns that he did have, I want to say it was knee surgery last April, or a minor procedure on his knee last April, and that his lateral quickness isn't quite what it once was, but he's still going to be one of the best defenders on the team. Austin Rivers, I think, is the best probably on-ball defender on the team. PJ Tucker is the best overall defender on the team because of his versatility and being able to guard positions 1 through 5, essentially. But I'd put Robert Covington on par with PJ Tucker as far as his level of defense. And so now you can essentially at all times ideally have 2+ defenders on the court in Austin Rivers, PJ Tucker, and Robert Covington. And then Eric Gordon is a plus defender in his own right. He's not a lockdown defender necessarily, but I feel like his defense is underrated at times in this Rockets system. You know, Eric Gordon is a guy, obviously we think offense first with Eric Gordon. We don't really think about his defense, but for the most part, he sticks with his man on defense. He doesn't fall asleep. You know, he switches well, doesn't really blow that many coverages, especially in the switching scheme. So I think Eric deserves a little bit of recognition in that regard. And then you've got Daniel House, too, at times, who, with his athleticism, as probably one of the most athletic guys on the team right behind Russell Westbrook, has shown that he can be a great defender, too. Being able to recover on a drive, being able to block shots, get his hands in passing lanes. So I'm optimistic about this team's ability to, again, they're not going to be a lockdown defensive team, but they'll be disruptive. They'll be chaotic. And if you can be disruptive and chaotic and generate a high amount of turnovers and get out in transition, I think that's the part that they're really leaning into, is you're not necessarily going to get every single stop you want to get with this lineup. Running, you know, a bunch of guys who are 6'6 and under. Robert Covington is now 6'7, so the Rockets lineup is not 6'6 and under anymore. And then Jordan Bell is 6'8, so there's that as well. But running a small ball lineup, you're not going to get stops. You're going to give up some boards. It's about limiting that as much as possible and generating as many opportunities for your team through forcing turnovers, playing the passing lanes, getting out in transition, and just really leaning into the offensive scheme that has worked so far. Allowing Westbrook the space to operate, allowing Harden the space to operate, and, you know, winning by some unconventional methods. It's been unconventional. I've griped about it quite a bit, but look, the Rockets are 3-0 right now, playing ultra small ball. And until that changes, until they start losing games playing small ball, I'm going to buy into it. Because at the end of it all, as much as I love to criticize him at times, and as much flack as he gets on social media, Mike D'Antoni is an NBA-level head coach who has decades of experience coaching basketball, who is a former player, who is a genius mind when it comes to the game of basketball. Yes, at times his rotations are frustrating. Yes, at times it feels like he doesn't know what a timeout is, obviously. But he gets paid to do what he does because he's good at it. And so I'm going to be blindly optimistic for a minute here and hope that D'Antoni can actually mold this new version of this year's Rockets team into an unconventional championship contender. I think it's possible. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt for the remainder of the season until I see otherwise, until I see them start losing some of these games, or until I see significant flaws in the system, which right now the significant flaw is they're going to get out-rebounded. We know that. They're going to get hammered on the boards. But maybe as they get used to this new system where they actually have to all buy in and rebound as a team, rebound by committee, that kind of thing, maybe we'll see that get better over time. We saw them get heavily out-rebounded against the Mavericks in the fourth quarter and almost lose the game because of it, right? And then we were seeing that a bit in the Pelicans game, and then they came back in the fourth quarter and they were plus in the rebounding department. I forget the margin, but they came back in that fourth quarter and they actually won the rebounding battle against the Pelicans in the fourth. That's with Zion on the court, right? A guy who rebounds like 80% of his misses or something ridiculous like that. And then against the Charlotte Hornets, against the Charlotte Hornets, the Rockets, 41 rebounds. The Hornets, 53 rebounds. So you're still getting out-rebounded by 12. You're minus 12 in the rebound department, but it wasn't nearly as egregious as the previous couple games. Again, the Pelicans game, you were out-rebounded by 20 boards. And then in the Dallas game, you were out-rebounded by, 15? Yeah. So it's getting better. It seems like it's trending down. And yeah, if you get out-rebounded by, 10 or so boards a game, that's fine, especially if you're generating as many turnovers as they have been generating. And then scoring off those turnovers is the other thing. So this is a lot to take in. There's a lot going on here. And the good news is, Ben DuBose, Rockets Wire editor, former Locked On host, will be joining me on tomorrow's podcast, which we'll be putting out, I'll try and get it out late Wednesday evening. We'll be recording it probably about 9 p.m. Wednesday night. So he'll have all of his thoughts to share on this as well. We'll have some healthy back and forth about it, I would imagine. And obviously, this is going to be a situation that is still developing. The Rockets still have to try and find themselves a center. They're still going to be making another move, I hope, before the trade deadline. But as it stands right now, the Rockets have two new members in Robert Covington and Jordan Bell. Clint Capella is no longer with the team. Neither are Nene or Gerald Green. I'm really sad to see Gerald Green go. I really am. And Nene. Look, they were all professionals. And obviously, I think the case with Gerald Green is he's going to get waived immediately. And I would imagine that he will continue his rehab here in Houston. And I forget the logistics behind a player who gets traded and then waived and whether or not he can re-sign. But look, let's pretend for a split second we'll be super optimistic that the Rockets, win it all this year. Gerald Green still gets a championship ring, right? Even if he isn't on the active roster that won the ring, he played with the team earlier this season. He was on the roster for a majority of the season. He still gets a championship ring. And I would imagine that he only signed off on this because he thought that it would help the team win a championship. And he's still in the good graces of the organization. It's not like they said, all right, Gerald, get the hell out. It's not like he left on bad terms. The Rockets can still re-sign him down the line whenever he passes up whatever mandatory probationary period there is for a player who gets traded and then waived and then wants to go back to his original team. So whatever the logistics are behind there, I'm sure he will be back in a Rockets jersey. And ideally, back in a Rockets jersey after they've won a championship. Before we completely get out of here, a couple quick hitting thoughts on the Rockets' win against the Charlotte Hornets, 125-110. Rockets improved to 32-18 on the season, I should say, 18-7 at home, drops the Hornets to 16-35. Look, James Harden dropped in 40 points, almost a 40-point triple-double, had 40 points, 9 rebounds, 12 assists, 3 steals, 1 block, 4 of 11 three-point shooting, 11 of 26 overall, 14 of 15 from the charity stripe. James Harden is back. He looked better. He was moving better. Some of the rebounds that I saw him getting, he looked like he had his elevation back. Can't say enough good things about James Harden in this one. And it looked like he was, you know, struggling a little bit to kind of get to the rim in the first half, I think. And then in the second half, things kind of felt like they opened up a bit more for him. Eric Gordon struggled in this one, missed all 12 of his three-point shots, but was 6 of 10 inside the arc. Daniel House Jr. carried on his phenomenal fourth-quarter performance against the Pelicans. He had 22 points in this one, 9 rebounds, had an assist, 3 steals, a block, 6 of 11 three-point shooting from Daniel House Jr. Great game from him. Ben McLemore, quiet in the first half, really picked it up in the second half. 14 points, had a couple rebounds, 4 assists, kind of helping to distribute the ball a little bit there. In the absence of Russell Westbrook, 4 of 9 shooting from behind the arc. PJ Tucker, first game in like 22 games that he's actually scored in double digits, had 13 points, 10 boards, so a small double-double there from PJ Tucker. 3 assists, 3 steals, some great defense being played by him, some great bench contributions from Austin Rivers and Tabo Sefolosha. Very minimal contribution from Isaiah Hartenstein, who only played 3 minutes and had 2 points, but Sefolosha had 7 points off the bench, just some rebounds. Austin Rivers, 11 points, 2 of 6 from behind the arc.